These lectures are part of the Great Courses series. They are produced by the Teaching Company. These lectures are titled Buddhism Part 2. Lecture 13, Buddhist Philosophy.
After my last lecture, I hope you feel intrigued and maybe even a little bit curious about the concept of emptiness. But I suspect, if I gauge your mood correctly after that long discussion of that difficult concept, that you also may be a little bit intimidated. It's not common, I think it's not common, in the religious traditions of the world to hear that everything is possible precisely because everything is unreal. This way of speaking is meant to give you pause, and it's meant to make you think in new ways about ordinary experiences. And I think, although I'm probably imposing my own imagination a little bit on the past in this respect, I think that this is what the Buddha actually intended when he began to speak about the concept of no-self. In this lecture, I want to push the study of emptiness a step further by looking at some of the ways Indian Buddhist philosophers have tried to pin down the meaning of emptiness. The study of Buddhist philosophy, unfortunately, is not particularly easy. The concept of emptiness already presents formidable difficulties to us, and these difficulties are only compounded by the technical style of argument that's favored by the philosophers in classical India. Buddhist philosophical texts, the ones that we beat our heads against when we study this tradition, were produced in a sophisticated monastic environment, and they often relied on a lot of technical discourse that now seems impenetrable to us, even in some of the best translations. It's not always easy to get at, particularly in the original languages either. But I think it's worth spending the space of at least one of our precious lectures grappling with the work of these philosophers, as it would be to grapple with the work of a sophisticated Jewish or Christian philosopher. And the reason for this, I think, should be pretty clear. A careful intellectual account of any religious tradition is going to help clarify for us what the basic ideas and basic problems are of the tradition. And more importantly, especially in the case of a tradition like Buddhism that really isn't familiar to us in a lot of ways, it helps us identify where the intellectual problems actually lay for Buddhists, not just where they lie for us as outside observers, but for the practitioners of the tradition themselves. So it's worth grappling a bit, I think, with the difficulties of this philosophical tradition. Now, where do we start? Maybe the best place is with a pretty basic question. What do we mean when we use the word Buddhist philosophy? Philosophy is a Western word, of course. It comes to us from the Greek. What do we mean when we use that word in a Buddhist setting? Now, the most common word that we're translating when we use this English word, philosophy, to talk about the Indian tradition, is a word that means simply vision. It's the word darshana. We've already seen that the word darshana is used to name the emotionally charged vision of an image in Buddhist worship. I said a few lectures ago that often when you go into worship in an Indian temple, there's a moment that is really quite dramatic when the door or the curtain is closed that covers the central image in the temple, and then there's a big banging of drums and a ringing of bells and all that sort of thing, and psht, the curtain is pulled aside and you have a look directly at the image. This image, this vision of the image is called darshana. It's taking the darshan of the image, as we often say in English, and it's a powerful and important emotional moment in Buddhist worship, as in Hindu worship and the worship of other religious traditions in India. This is actually what the word philosophy means. It's darshana. It's seeing ultimate reality face to face. And in a lot of ways, it's similar to this emotionally charged vision of a deity, because you're confronting ultimate reality with a certain kind of sensory directness. You see it, and it affects you. So that's what philosophy is meant in, I suppose, an etymological sense, to do, but it also, of course, has very practical implications for Buddhists as well.